Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to Monday. Around here, we refer to it as Meatloaf Monday because it just very often is Meatloaf Monday. I got a sound effect for that. Play it, man.
I think I'll try the meatloaf sandwich.
Do you know what that is?
Yes, meatloaf.
What is it? I'm only asking in case I have to describe it later to a doctor.
Look, it's nutritious. That's my favorite. It's delicious.
Made out of meat. Add ketchup if you want. I couldn't care less.
Meatloaf Monday. Although I think Charlene told me she's fixing chicken pot pie tonight, so I have no idea how to reconcile that. But around here, it's Meatloaf Monday. So JP's on the board. Hey, man, how you doing?
We're going after, after Saturday. Yeah,
you're still reeling from Saturday's game, aren't you?
That was brutal.
That was brutal. I almost texted you, and I thought, no, I'm going to let it go.
You know, Alabama was lucky to even be in that game. They played so bad. It was not a good performance.
Well, you know, I got news. They still played better than Auburn.
That is true.
As an Auburn fan, I got to say, what's your problem?
it was nice to, after a loss, not to hear from my Auburn friends because they're in the same boat right now.
Yeah, they're in the same boat with a worst record. Anyway, I'm just glad we have a recruiting class we'd like to talk about. Thank you very much. All right. Hey, listen, we got a great show laid on for you coming up at 3 o'clock today. We got two people calling in from one organization. So Americans for Prosperity is a great organization doing conservative advocacy and intervention all over the nation in different states. Well, the Alabama chapter president's a guy that I know. He's been on the show before. Adam Thompson is going to be on. He's also bringing on Sophia Hamilton, who is one of the policy analysts that works with Americans for Prosperity. And we're going to talk about big government regulation getting in the way and what we can do about it. So Adam Thompson, Sophia Hamilton with Americans for Prosperity calling in at 3 o'clock. Stand by for that one. And that's just to whet your appetite. We still got a whole triple dipper full of stuff. So hit it, man.
The Triple Dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. First out the gate, Regulation Nation. That's who we are. Look at when every once in a while, government just flat out gets in the way of progress. Now, government has a role. I get that. I'm not going to tell you that government has no role in our lives because it just does. But there are times, though, when government just forgets itself and just gets all uppity and does things that have no bearing on reality. And, oh, by the way, is almost more like they're trying to prove their reason for existence. Not necessary. Those regulations are business killers. Regulation Nation, that's number one on the Triple Dipper. And then number two, liberal heads are exploding everywhere. Can you hear the booms? I mean, listen, they're all over the place. Liberal heads are exploding because Trump went in and just decided to biggie size his campaign. So if you haven't heard, Trump went and did a shift at a McDonald's, probably a partial shift. And libs are just freaking out right now. Oh, my God. You know what they hate, though? What they're really hating is he looks like he's having a great time and the audience response was huge. So Trump was slinging fries and flipping burgers and the libs don't know what to do about it. And they're beside themselves. And we're going to break it down. Number two, Triple Dipper. I'm just calling it the biggie size. We're going to biggie size it. That's number two. And then number three, libs and guns. You know what? Those two just don't go together. Libs and guns. Look, when libs start talking about guns, they just make fools of themselves. And then when libs want to talk about your guns, it usually always involves some new regulation, some new law, or some new infringement upon your Second Amendment rights. So, yeah, we're going to talk about number three on the Triple Dipper. Libs and guns. All right, let me turn all over to the Right Side Way monologue. And I got to open my comments for the day by saying that sometimes the American dream involves amazing patience. Just patience. I mean, like, literally patience. Take a deep breath. There's no free lunch. The best things in life are worth getting sweaty and dirty and taking risks for, right? And oftentimes, those best things in life involve one of the least comfortable fruits of the spirit, patience. So patience is tough. I mean, patience is deferred gratification. Patience is getting there eventually, but making yourself enjoy the ride and stay on mission, even when your selfish nature says it just ain't worth it anymore. I remember once at Army Ranger School, going out on a night ambush patrol. Night ambushes were the worst, as we struggled with sleep deprivation and hunger. And, oh, by the way, I went in the wintertime, so I was a winter ranger. So imagine being cold, wet, and hungry and immensely sleepy, and then having to lay down on the ground quietly for hours and hope you don't miss the enemy patrol walking by. People falling asleep left and right was just like common. Well, on one occasion, I lucked out. When I opened my MRE, which we hardly ever got to eat, but when I had opened mine, like the day before, I got the old-fashioned caramels that used to be in the MREs. They were the, you know, the square caramels in a stack of six of them, wrapped in clear, crinkly cellophane, and then each one of them was individually wrapped in their own clear cellophane. Look, I was so hungry, but I was patient. I made myself wait, which is impossible at Ranger School usually. Usually, you wanted to eat right then because it's all you could. But you see, I was supposed to trigger the ambush that night with a Claymore mine. And I knew if I fell asleep, which everyone did at some point, the ambush would miss out and the patrol would fail. So I kept those caramels. And that night, we laid up in a linear ambush on a trail in the Florida swamps. And I ever so slowly, ever so carefully, one at a time, bit by bit, opened those caramels. I mean, sound carries at night. So the patience factor was huge. You know what I was doing? I was keeping myself awake. I wouldn't let myself eat a single one of them until they were all opened. I took over 5 minutes per caramel to get them opened without making noise, and I lined them up in the moonlight on the barrel of my M16 rifle. In the moonlight through the trees, I could see them, and I waited, and I waited, and nobody heard the crinkles, not one. 40 minutes later, this bony ranger started enjoying those caramels, and man, I'll tell you what, right after I was done, we saw the enemy patrol. I was wide awake from sugar and patience. I hit the clacker on the claymore, and the ambush went off without a hitch. Perfect. Patience paid off. So laugh if you want to, but it's still one of my best personal analogies for patience. But yeah, I do these monologues every day, right? They're usually my thoughts and beliefs around some form of service or politics or some point of cultural impact. But today, in the theme of patience, I want to do more than just tell my personal stories. I mean, I could sit here all day and talk about raising my kids or going to war or building a media company, but every so often I've decided that I've just got to tell somebody else's story. To me, the most powerful stories in the world are the true testimonies of men and women who have strived and lived hard and overcome obstacles and made sacrifices, sometimes exhibiting amazing patience, especially on things like God and country. So in today's disruptive culture wars, we're constantly being assaulted by beta males and deviants who live in a narcissistic swirl, right? But these people, they aren't the norm. Those people aren't the salt of the earth. No one turns to people like that for help in a crisis. No one looks to them for leadership or compassion or role modeling. They have no patience. See, the progressive left, they desperately want immediate gratification. They want what they want when they want it. Impatient leftists, those are the weak and the feeble who are the actual outliers in our society. I believe that we are living in a time in which there is a war on hard work and patience. But it's a war that we can easily win because there are still real men out there. Men who love their families, men who work hard, live hard, play hard, raise their kids, men who teach their boys how to roughhouse, men who salute the flag and sit tall in the saddle. And men like that are really more the norm than the gender-fluid beta males that get all the clicks on TikTok. So yes, I am inspired by the true stories of men, real men, who defy odds and exhibit great patience as they pursue their goals. Well, recently in that vein, I became aware of a man that has a story that's the stuff of legend. I don't know why there hasn't been a movie made about him yet. So let me take a few minutes and tell you about a guy who literally sat tall in the saddle as a cowboy. The guy I'm talking about, his name is Chad Hennings. So Hennings grew up in Elberon, Iowa. He was born into a farm family. He would sometimes spend 12 hours a day helping his dad and his granddad raise corn and run a feedlot for the cattle. He says he learned his work ethic from watching his father and grandfather and his older brother. And by his senior year in high school, Chad Hennings was also an all-state in football. And he was also the state heavyweight wrestling champion, which, by the way, is not hard to believe since he was 6'6", 290 pounds. So he wound up being a five-star recruit with a college scholarship, had offers from all over, but he also had this real sense of service and duty. And so he chose instead to take an appointment to the Air Force Academy. Chad Hennings, he was a competitor. By his sophomore year, he was helping lead Air Force to a number five in the nation streak. In his senior year, he led the nation in sacks. He won the Outland Trophy as the best interior lineman in the country. In 1988, Hennings graduated from the Air Force Academy, and he was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the U.S. Air Force. But also, as soon as he graduated, he was drafted in the 11th round by the Dallas Cowboys. Huh. What do you do? There's the goal. He exhibited great patience. He chose to defer on the NFL and go fulfill his duties and obligations as an Air Force officer. The Cowboys would have to wait. Hennings really didn't know if he'd ever play again, to be honest, but he kept working as if he would. Hennings' scores were high enough to make it into the pilot program for the Air Force, but his dramatic size meant that he would have to have a height-weight waiver, and there's only three aircrafts in the Air Force inventory that a guy as big as Hennings could fly. So he made it, though, and he chose to be an A-10 Thunderbolt pilot. And y'all, I'm going to tell you right now, as a ground pounder myself, the A-10 is a beautiful aircraft. It's somewhat ungainly in view to some others next to the sexy planes like the F-16s and the F-22s. And its nickname is the Warthog. It's designed for close air support for ground troops. But it was exactly a good fit, a perfect fit, a patient fit for Chad Hennings. He said the life of hard work and competition he'd grown up in just continued as an Air Force pilot. He was a member of the 92nd Tactical Fighter Squadron. Hennings didn't touch a football for years, but he was patient, and he continued to work out hard. And I mean, like, work out hard. He became known for his workouts. But he also flew 45 combat sorties in the Persian Gulf War over Iraq. In 1992, Hennings retired from active duty as a decorated pilot with the rank of captain. And then he called the Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys were pretty hesitant. I mean, he was already an old guy now. He's been several years away from even touching a football. But they let him come to tryouts. He made the team, but Coach Jimmy Johnson was thinking about cutting him. And then Coach saw one of his monster workouts. Chad Hennings in the gym was a sight to behold. Hennings stayed. He'd been patient. He worked the issue. And within 6 months of leaving active duty, Hennings put down his flight helmet and picked up a football helmet on a team filled with legends like Emmitt Smith and Michael Irvin and Leon Lett. He started off on special teams, but he kept working and grinding until he earned his way into the starting lineup on the defensive line. To make things even more surreal, Hennings flew his last combat mission and played his first Super Bowl in the same year. I say first Super Bowl because Hennings went on to become a three-time Super Bowl champion. He retired after 8 years in the NFL, of which all were with the Cowboys. In 2006, he was inducted in the College Football Hall of Fame. There might not be any other man in the world that can put on his resume on LinkedIn and have it say three-time Super Bowl champion fighter pilot. But in spite of all the accolades, accomplishments, the awards, Hennings is also quick to point out that his faith in God is what drives him. He's a man who has been given incredible talent. He's been given incredible opportunity. He's also a man who sees more value in what the world doesn't see. He's a solid example to his kids, a loving husband to his wife. He's been fixing his eyes on his goals and working with patience to get there his entire life. Today, Hennings and his wife live in Texas. He's a businessman. He's also the founder of Wingmen Ministries, an organization that encourages discipleship and mentorship for men. Look, don't tell me that the impatient, gender-fluid beta male is the wave of the future. Not a chance. America's filled up with men who find their goals, defer their personal gratification, and work with great patience to go the extra mile. They might not all be fighter pilots with three Super Bowl rings, but on the inside they are. Sitting tall in the saddle, that's really the state of mind. Manliness, it's still okay. I'm saying be patient. The American dream requires it. Be patient and work your tails off. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Yeah, Chad Hennings, go look him up. Can you imagine? 6'6", 290-pound fighter pilot. I mean, the plane had to have extra fuel to get him off the ground, I would say. Nonetheless, he did what he did, but he kept his dream alive. He stayed patient, and he worked it. And he wound up having a major career in the NFL, too. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, pulling pins on truth grenades. So Chad Hennings, I forget how I found out about him. And that was, JP, that was really kind of before your time, I guess. But that was definitely my time. I mean, the 80s, I'm a product of the 80s. So he's around my age, obviously. But you just asked me during the break about the one that's kind of your time was Pat Tillman.
Yeah.
Yeah. A guy who deferred his opportunities in the NFL and And old boy was a stud.
Yeah, that wasn't just like a third string guy going over. Like that was a borderline star in the NFL going over.
Absolutely. And tragedy the way he died too. It was apparently in a firefight, and he wound up being friendly fire that killed him. Which is just, you know, there's no excuse for it. It's also part of the fog of war, but it's still awful.
Chad Hennings is one of those humans where they just have a supernatural resume of 3-time Super Bowl champion, fighter pilot, like you said, like one of those resumes where it's like that's special.
I know, like how does that all get on one resume? I don't understand. Yeah. How many lives did you live? Yeah, absolutely. Got a few text messages. Text lines are open. Text it. Call it. Same number for both, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Harris from Athens says Dems heads are exploding like Hamas leadership during an Israeli phone call. That I'm going to read that again, and then I'm going to ask you to follow it with applause or laughter or something. You choose a sound effect. Harris from Athens heard me say that Dems heads are exploding about McDonald's, about Trump being at McDonald's. And so Harris from Athens says Dems heads are exploding like Hamas leadership during an Israeli phone call. that is funny. All right, Harris from Athens, you are so far winning the text lines right out front. Allie from Athens says, Colonel, do you remember how it would nearly come to blows in Iraq over the MREs that had the imminent? Yes, I do. Sweet memories, literally. Good word, sir. Thank you, Allie. So I'll never forget the M&Ms, like the commercial grade M&Ms branded and everything, came to the MREs while I was at Ranger School. All right, so this would be a long time ago. This tells you how old I am. I went to Ranger School in 1990, and 91. And wow, I'll never forget. One of the Ranger instructors was walking by a foxhole, and one of my buddies had just cracked open his MRE, and he looked down at him and he goes, "Get out of Ranger! What do you doing with those MREs or the M&Ms? You got contraband, yada yada." And we're like, "No, Sergeant, it was inside my MRE. I don't know how to do it." And one of the other RIs had to come over and go, "Jim, it's all right, man. They actually put those in the MREs now." He's like, "What's this army coming to?" that was it. Don from Cairo says, my last night at Ranger School, we were allowed to have a fire if we could start a fire in the rain. My buddy and I went through our rucksack, got everything that would burn. I found a sea rat can that was pork slices, the worst thing possible. Had a half inch of grease, so we heated over the fire and ate it like it was prime beef. Rangers lead the way. Don from Cairo, appreciate you. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, don't argue with me. I'm talking about Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, even Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. We are just going to keep going here, and I got to say, I was just commenting a minute ago to JP, beautiful weather. I mean, like, so the Right Side Studios overlook a golf course, and it's kind of cool. It's kind of distracting at times, but also shows you can see the weather. We're looking outside, but it's like right at almost 80 degrees right now. This morning, I left the house, it was 37 degrees, and then that's a swing of 43 degrees. Mm-hmm. By midday.
It's that bipolar time of the year.
Yes, it is. We got bipolar weather. I don't even know what to wear in the morning. Do I wear short sleeves or not? Anyway, Scott from Somerville did text in. He says, when I was in, the best MRE was Hamlet. Oh, yeah, Hamlet. If you could get that and trade for a packet of cheese, that was like a 5-star restaurant when you were in the field. Choices were limited back then. Definitely no M&Ms. Dude, ham and chicken loaf. Remember the ham and chicken loaf? They had a ham. I don't know how anybody sat around and said, we need to come up with a new menu item. What do you want to do? Let's have a ham and chicken loaf. Okay. And it won. And it made it. And they made lots and lots of ham and chicken loaves out of pieces, parts pressed together and put into a foil packet in some kind of gelatinous stuff. But I ate that thing, man. Ham and chicken loaf. I was one of the few, listen, you're going to get me started on MREs. In the old school days, I was one of the few that liked the dehydrated beef or pork patties. They came to you like a little brick, and they were about the size of your palm, and they were just, it was like just a piece of freeze-dried, and you had to add water and then wait. And it would reconstitute itself and turn into alleged meat.
Alleged meat.
Alleged meat. But we discovered, because at Ranger School, we traded recipes like crazy. What are you going to do with that? Well, here's what I do. Oh, really? What do you do? If you had the ketchup packet, which was powder, and you had the cracker, which every one of them had the big square cracker, you take the ketchup packet, you spread it over the cracker, you rehydrate the pork or the beef, you slice it up, put it on there, and if you're lucky enough to have cheese, brother, you got pizza. I'm not lying. That's funny. MRE pizza. First time I saw somebody do that, I thought, genius. You're the smartest man I've ever met. And you're right here in a foxhole with me, eating a pizza. Everything was good. Came home, tried a few things at home that I thought were wonderful in the field and could not understand how I let that happen. I lost, by the way, as long as we're just rambling here, I lost 31 pounds at Ranger School. I gained 32 the first month I was back.
Wow.
I gained 32 pounds in a month when I got back. I was eating everything in sight. Josh was little bitty at the time. Like, Mommy, Daddy ate my snack. You know, he'd leave a little bowl of Cheerios sitting there on the table. Swoof, I was to swoop in and snarf it down. 32 pounds in 1 month.
That's impressive.
It got to the point that my body hurt because I was expanding so fast. All right, enough of that. John from Huntsville says, Phil, sensational monologue. Also, did you hear that Kamala Harris is under fire for mocking Christian students? I did hear that. In fact, I suspect that will be an episode on the show of trying to develop that topic a little more. But between that one and another story about Israel having its battle plans betrayed, possibly by the U.S., I got a couple stories that I'm trying to develop a little more on. He says, by the way, he says, your text actually cut off here, brother, but I think it says, spectacular job on Saturday solo host. Oh, JP, I guess it is. Mm-hmm. Spectacular job hosting on Saturday solo in your two-hour sports show. Tried my best to be your co-host by texting in a lot of questions and predictions. Most of my predictions were incorrect, he says, just like yours.
I got improved to 5 right this past weekend. Nice. So I went from 3 to 4, and now I'm at 5. Well, let's see if we can get to 6. Probably not.
Nice. Last one or two, Mike from Florence says, hardest job I ever had, he's talking military again, was fire watch and foreign materials exclusion in the RCF nuclear plant. Wow. He says, you weren't allowed to have anything consumable, including in your mouth, and could be immediately fired if you were caught nodding off. There usually wasn't anyone to talk to. Reading anything other than material directly involved with the task was forbidden, and the hum of the equipment was unfortunately some great white noise. God, brother, that's like a recipe for disaster right there. Okay, I can't top that. I'll take my foxhole stories over your nuclear power plant stories. Wow. Marvin from Addison, Alabama says, those were my favorite MREs also, beef and pork patties. Thank you. There is someone else out there who has this weird, twisted dietary habit like me. We also made a thing called Ranger Crunch, by the way. Take the peanut butter, which, by the way, was known to stop up your system, which is not bad in the field. Take the peanut butter, crush the cracker inside its own packet, put the peanut butter inside and stir the cracker around inside of it, then sprinkle in the cocoa powder. And if you're lucky and you have a sugar packet, that too. Eat the whole thing with a spoon. We called it Ranger Crunch.
That actually sounds pretty good.
It was nasty when I got home. I tried it once. I thought, this is awful. But anyway. All right, listen, we're going to start off this first dipper, Regulation Nation. So here's the thing. There are times when I recognize and I fully admit that government has a role. It does. The essential services of life provided by government are things that you and I expect. Things like policing, things like emergency services, things like infrastructure, like building roads and bridges, that kind of thing. There is usually a constitutional mandate to provide an education, although we've seen time and again that the government version of education is usually not near the quality that we would expect or want. Government provides a military. I mean, to provide for the common defense, secure the general welfare, ensure the general welfare, all these things are necessary. But there's a limit. And yet, too often, government does not know its own limits. What we see by and large is that regulations are nothing but hindrances to actual progress. There's a clip. By the way, get that audio clip. I'm going to go ahead and call for that pretty soon here. I think I'm going to play it here, like maybe before the break. But government agencies a lot of times get involved in setting the tone without passing laws because they are not lawmakers, without signing executive orders because they are not executive branch, you know, bosses, CEOs. And too often they are staffed with people who have never had to be out in the private sector knowing what it means to actually cut a paycheck, balance a budget, pay your employees, maybe not pay yourself, and try to get something done. And they keep putting more and more regulations on. And these government agencies too often do these things to justify their own existence. It's as if they need to show the world why they are who they are, so they put another regulation in place that they can enforce, and it becomes a self-licking ice cream cone. I passed the regulation. I get to enforce the regulation. And oh, by the way, I get to penalize you for not abiding by the regulation. And then because I feel like it, I'm going to put another regulation, and then I'm going to just basically have a new piece to my resume. It's like the good idea fairy floats through the room and just slaps another regulation on. And they too often don't think about what it does to the private sector. Never mind the fact that the private sector is the producer of society and the government is the consumer of society. The private sector is what feeds the government sector in terms of its revenue. And yet the government is so often what stymies the private sector's ability to do. Now, Elon Musk gave a speech. I'm going to try and get this in before the break. It's a little bit long, so I may stop you in like midstream, JP. But Elon Musk was talking about SpaceX just trying to get the permits to be able to, you know, launch and recover one of its space vehicles. And Elon Musk is pretty funny, actually. He gave this little talk where he was taking Q&A, and somebody asked him, what did you have to go through to be able to, you know, bring down one of your SpaceX, you know, vehicles into the ocean? Hear what he had to say. Go ahead and play it.
I mean, I got a bunch of sort of nutty stories, you know. Some of them are, I guess, like, kind of funny. There's, you know, we had to do this, SpaceX had to do the study to see if Starship would hit a shark. And I'm like, it's a big ocean, you know. There's a lot of sharks. It's not impossible, but it's very unlikely. And said, well, you have to, you know, this is, I think, from National Marine Fisheries, one of the, you know, NIMF it's called. You know, they were like, well, you have to do the study on whether you're going to hit a shark. We're like, what? We said, okay, fine, we'll do the analysis. And then, well, can you give us the shark data? They're like, no, we can't give you the shark data. We're like, okay, well, then we're in a bit of a quandary. How do we solve this difficult, this shark probability issue? They said, well, we could give it to our Western division, but we don't trust them. And I'm like, am I in a comedy sketch here? And then, like, they're worried about the shark density data, like the people who hunt sharks for shark fins somehow getting their hands on the shark data. And so eventually, I think we got the data and we could, you know, run the analysis to say, like, yeah, the sharks are going to be fine.
All right, hold on right here. We're going to play some more of this because it gets better. So sharks, think about this. SpaceX, to be able to launch its you know, its mission, has to talk to wildlife and fisheries or at marine fisheries. Anyway, the bottom line is you think, okay, why does that government agency even have a role? Oh, no, it may land something in the water and it might hit a shark. But then they're scared about the people who hunt sharks knowing where the sharks are, so they don't want to tell Elon Musk where the sharks are so he can study whether the sharks might get hit. And he's like, this is a comedy sketch. It got better. Keep playing it.
But they wouldn't let us proceed with launch until we did this crazy shark data. And then we thought, okay, well, now we're done. And they said, but what about whales? I'm like, when you look at a picture of the Pacific, what percentage of the surface area of the Pacific do you see as whale? Because I see, look at a picture, I don't see any, it's like, you can't, where's a whale? And honestly, if the ship did hit a whale, it's like, honestly, that whale had it coming, because it's like the odds are so low. You know, it's like Final Destination, the whale edition. It's like fate had it in for that whale, you know. And so we have to do the whale analysis. And it's like, okay, yeah, the whales will be fine too, you know. It goes on and on. And then there's like, well, what if the rocket goes underwater, then explodes, and then the whales have hearing damage? Like, this is real. This is actually, and we're like, look, if we could make a rocket go underwater, and be a submarine, that would be like a feat of physics we could not accomplish. Okay, this is not how it works. So,
all right, stop. Anyway. Stop. He, by the way, he's actually going to release pictures. Apparently, they were required to capture two seals.
And I was just about to bring that up.
Yes.
He didn't, yeah.
And put headphones on them and test them with rocket noises to see whether or not it impacted the seal's psyche or damaged their hearing. This is government gone amok. All right, we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, though, that's Elon Musk. I get it. He's a billionaire. It's SpaceX. He's got the resources. But what about small business? And what about hometown America? What about even right here in Alabama? All right, we're going to talk about it. Regulation Nation, that's who we are, apparently. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, listen, we're going to start off this first dipper, Regulation Nation. So here's the thing. There are times when I recognize and I fully admit that government has a role. It does. The essential services of life provided by government are things that you and I expect, things like policing, things like emergency services, things like infrastructure, like building roads and bridges, that kind of thing. There is usually a constitutional mandate to provide an education, although we've seen time and again that the government version of education is usually not near the quality that we would expect or want. Government provides a military. I mean, to provide for the common defense, secure the general welfare, ensure the general welfare, all these things are necessary. But there's a limit. And yet, too often, government does not know its own limits. What we see by and large is that regulations are nothing but hindrances to actual progress. There's a clip. By the way, get that audio clip. I'm going to go ahead and call for that pretty soon here. I think I'm going to play it here, like maybe before the break. But government agencies a lot of times get involved in setting the tone without passing laws because they are not lawmakers, without signing executive orders because they are not executive branch, you know, bosses, CEOs. And too often, they are staffed with people who have never had to be out in the private sector knowing what it means to actually cut a paycheck, balance a budget, pay your employees, maybe not pay yourself, and try to get something done. And they keep putting more and more regulations on. And these government agencies too often do these things to justify their own existence. It's as if they need to show the world why they are who they are, so they put another regulation in place that they can enforce, and it becomes a self-licking ice cream cone. I pass the regulation. I get to enforce the regulation. And oh, by the way, I get to penalize you for not abiding by the regulation. And then because I feel like it, I'm going to put another regulation and then I'm going to just basically have a new piece to my resume. It's like the good idea fairy floats through the room and just slaps another regulation on. And they too often don't think about what it does to the private sector. Never mind the fact that the private sector is the producer of society and the government is the consumer of society. The private sector is what feeds the government sector in terms of its revenue. And yet, the government is so often what stymies the private sector's ability to do. Now, Elon Musk gave a speech. I'm going to try and get this in before the break. It's a little bit long, so I may stop you in like midstream, JP. But Elon Musk was talking about SpaceX just trying to get the permits to be able to, you know, launch and recover one of its space vehicles. And Elon Musk is pretty funny, actually. He gave this little talk where he was taking Q&A, and somebody asked him, what did you have to go through to be able to, you know, bring down one of your SpaceX, you know, vehicles into the ocean? Hear what he had to say. Go ahead and play it.
I mean, I got a bunch of sort of nutty stories, you know. Some of them are, I guess, like, kind of funny. There's, you know, we had to do this, SpaceX had to do the study to see if Starship would hit a shark. And I'm like, it's a big ocean, you know. There's a lot of sharks. It's not impossible, but it's very unlikely. And said, well, you have to, you know, this is, I think, from National Marine Fisheries, one of the, you know, NIMF, it's called. You know, they were like, well, you have to do the study on whether you're going to hit a shark. We're like, what? We said, okay, fine, we'll do the analysis. And then, well, can you give us the shark data? They're like, no, we can't give you the shark data. We're like, okay, well, then we're in a bit of a quandary. How do we solve this difficult, this shock probability issue? They said, well, we could give it to our Western division, but we don't trust them. And I'm like, am I in a comedy sketch here? And then, like, they're worried about the shock density data, like the people who hunt sharks for shark fins somehow getting their hands on this shark density, the shark data, and so eventually I think we got the data and we could run the analysis to say like yeah the sharks are going to be fine.
All right, hold on right here. We're going to play some more of this because it gets better. So sharks, think about this. SpaceX to be able to launch its mission has to talk to wildlife and fisheries or at marine fisheries. Anyway, the bottom line is you think, okay, why does that government agency even have a role? Oh, it may land something in the water and it might hit a shark. But then they're scared about the people who hunt sharks knowing where the sharks are, so they don't want to tell Elon Musk where the sharks are so he can study whether the sharks might get hit. And he's like, this is a comedy sketch. It got better. Keep playing it.
But they wouldn't let us proceed with launch until we did this crazy shark data. And then we thought, okay, well, now we're done. And they said, but what about whales? I'm like, when you look at a picture of the Pacific, what percentage of the surface area of the Pacific do you see as whale? Because look at a picture, I don't see any, it's like, where's a whale? And honestly, if the ship did hit a whale, it's like, honestly, that whale had it coming, because it's like the odds are so low. You know, it's like Final Destination, the whale edition. It's like fate had it in for that whale, and so we have to do the whale analysis. And it's like, okay, yeah, the whales will be fine too, you know. It goes on and on. And then there's like, well, what if the rocket goes underwater, then explodes, and then the whales have hearing damage? Like, this is real. This is actually, and we're like, look, if we could make a rocket go underwater and be a submarine, that would be like a feat of physics we could not accomplish, okay? This is not how it works. So,
all right, stop. Anyway. Stop. Hey, by the way, he's actually going to release pictures. Apparently, they were required to capture two seals.
And I was just about to bring that up.
Yes. And put headphones on them and test them with rocket noises to see whether or not it impacted the seal's psyche or damaged their hearing. This is government gone amok. All right, we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, though, that's Elon Musk. I get it. He's a billionaire. It's SpaceX. He's got the resources. But what about small business? And what about hometown America? What about even right here in Alabama? All right, we're going to talk about it. Regulation Nation, that's who we are, apparently. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Man, making common sense like a superpower up in here. All right, we're talking about Regulation Nation, the idea that government regulation is at the lowest level going to wind up being necessary because you don't want people building houses that'll fall down when a good wind comes up, right? I get it. You don't want roads that crack and fall apart when the truck drives over them all the time. You don't want, things to be non-standardized so that nothing matches from one state to the next. There's going to be some measure of government regulation that actually works. So I'm not going to try and portray this as like, the so far into the libertarian mindset that you just think that, oh, government's a waste of time. Let us do as we see fit. No, that's called anarchy. That's not what I'm talking about. What I am talking about, though, is overregulation, like ridiculous regulation, like the kind that inhibits progress, like the kind that just really exists so that, some bureaucrat somewhere can justify their own existence. That is just absolutely asinine. Well, a minute ago, it was kind of fun to hear, SpaceX owner Elon Musk talk about what it's like as a billionaire to deal with a massive program like SpaceX, having to deal with ridiculous government regulation and the requirements that the bureaucrats, the hoops they made him jump through. But he's a billionaire. He's the owner of a massive multi-billion-dollar company. What about the small guy? Well, I got a couple of stories here. Like, first of all, I will say this. Like, a general contractor recently went up, and I pulled this off of Jacksonville Local News. Jacksonville Local News. A guy named Steve Martinez is the president of his own general contracting company. And he went up to testify before Congress. And he told them that government regulations are the barriers to increasing the housing supply. Kamala Harris wants to build 3 million. Is it 3 million? millions of new houses. How many houses? I forgot how many it was. It's like ridiculous. But she wants to build millions and millions of new houses. But he points out government regulations are the barriers to increasing our housing supply. He says regulatory barriers, including things like complying with building codes, make up nearly 25% of the cost of a single-family home, more than 40% of an apartment. Can you imagine that? You're building a house, and 25% of the cost is just trying to comply with... Listen, I can tell you, Charlene and I, we finally built a house. We lived in the same house for 24 years. We built a house 4 or 5 years ago. And right when we're already pre-approved for a septic system. And then the Department of Public Health decided to get a little busy and come in and make a little something happen. And we went from having a pre-approved conventional system that they had already said was okay to they changed their mind. And now we have to have an engineered system with, you know, curtain drains and, you know, mounds in the yard. And this, it's like, what? And it added exponential amount of cost to our home build. But he points out things like one CEO said the average cost of a shipping container has increased 3 times in the last 90 days, he said. This story came out in July, by the way. So this guy asked, what about these regulations? What are we doing? Well, here's a classic example, the little guy. How about this? Americans for Prosperity, the same organization that our two guests are going to be representing here in a few minutes after the next break, they helped out with a situation in Iowa. A guy named William Burt had gotten in trouble with drugs and, you know, being out on the streets and doing things, and he went to jail. And while he was in jail, he was trained to be a barber. I actually had a barber myself who'd been a jailhouse barber who got his license when he got out, did a great job. He loved it. He connected with his patrons. He discovered a calling he thought that was legal, except that when he got out, he worked for somebody with a license. The license himself, by the way, was it cost him, I want to say he had to wind up spending thousands of dollars. Where is it? Yeah, thousands of dollars and take a course and spend several years getting trained. Okay, he did. And then he wanted to open a mobile barbershop. Thought it'd be a wonderful thing. It was the kind of thing he thought, I can go into neighborhoods where they can't go places. They're not as mobile. Maybe there's, you know, retirement centers. I can bring the barbershop to them. He had a great idea. He wrote up a business plan. He invested thousands of his own dollars, and the state of Iowa told him he couldn't do it. Why? It was a violation of the health codes of the state of Iowa. And so they just basically said no. They were squashing his plan. Every state surrounding him allowed this. His didn't. Why? Because his state government was stuck in a rut, and they had a regulation. And so Americans for Prosperity, they got involved. They helped him walk through the process of meeting with his elected officials. He went down to the state capitol. He got legislation passed pretty much personally, along with Americans for Prosperity helping. Iowa alone is not as bad as Alabama, but Iowa alone has occupational licensing laws that they say, some studies say, prohibit like 48,000 jobs from being built, costing billions in economic value every year. But this guy went down there, he did all that it took, and he started his own online campaign. A one-minute video got 40,000 views on YouTube. He started an online petition. Next thing you know, Governor Kim Reynolds is signing a bill, and he's got a mobile barbershop, and he owns a brick-and-mortar barbershop at the same time. The American dream should not be crushed by a bureaucrat deciding here's a new regulation. Well, I'm going to tell you in a minute when we have our guest call in what happened in Hoover that required the community of Hoover to spend $1 million just to know whether they could have a new clinic. It was unbelievable. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And, oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two here on a Meatloaf Monday. I don't know where hour number one even went. I think I enjoyed it too much. But, listen, we spent the last half hour or so before we got to that last break talking about government regulation. I'm not a fan. I recognize a role, a place for government in general, but overregulation tends to be a stymieing of the private sector. It tends to crush the ability for government to even exist because the revenues that it, you know, fund government come from the private sector. And then, oh, by the way, more often than not, we find out these regulations are literally, you know, ill thought out, and too often they're designed just to help a governmental department prove its reason for existence. All right. Having said that and sounding extremely libertarian, let me go and introduce some people to you. There's an organization that I've become aware of that I really like, Americans for Prosperity. Americans for Prosperity is a national, one of the largest grassroots advocacy organizations in the entire country. They advocate for the conservative principles of less government, more opportunity for the free market. That being said, there's two individuals, one of whom I've known for years as his time in Montgomery coincided with mine. Adam Thompson serves as the Alabama State Director for Americans for Prosperity. He's spent 15 years in state government, so he knows it inside and out, knows where the bones are buried. But he's also not only served as a deputy commissioner of a state cabinet agency, he's been in roles with the governor's office, state auditor's office. And he's also accompanied today by Sophia Hamilton, who's a policy analyst at Americans for Prosperity. She advocates for accessible and affordable quality health care. And today we're going to talk about that in particular. All right, having said all that, maybe I ought to bring them on. Adam Thompson, Sophia Hamilton, how are y'all doing?
Good afternoon. Doing well, Senator. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks. And is Sophia on the line right there with you, I hope?
Yes, I am. It's nice to be here. Thank you for having me today.
Well thank you both. And thanks for what you do, by the way, for the cause, so to speak. Adam, I thought, if you don't mind, before we go too much further, you've been on my show before, but I think it'd be fair for the audience to hear a little bit about AFP, Americans for Prosperity, and what Alabama's up to with that that organization.
Absolutely. We'd be glad to. So Americans for Prosperity, like you said, is a national grassroots organization. So we are in 36 states advocating for policies that we believe freedom and opportunity are keys for unleashing prosperity for all. We believe people are capable of extraordinary things when barriers are removed. And unfortunately, far too often, those barriers are governmental.
Yeah.
So we advocate for those policies and help individuals take action to advocate for policies that will make their lives better, provide more freedom and opportunity so they can live their version of the American dream. There are no one-size-fits-all options, and so we connect with neighbors and friends and communities across the state of Alabama to advocate for those policies. So like this last legislative session, we were successful in getting school choice passed in Alabama.
Absolutely.
So in the next session, we're going to take on regulatory reform, which we'll talk about here with you this afternoon, and some of the things that are happening. But your comments right before the break were just spot on.
Well, no, I've seen you around Montgomery for a bit. I mean, I know your conservative bent, and I'm excited to see you very much in the mix right now with an organization that helps hold government accountable. That being said, just for today's benefit, one of the things that really galls me, and I've had experience with it, certificate of need. A lot of folks don't realize that Alabama has this archaic system of stymieing the private sector in the medical field by requiring them to prove their reasons for even wanting to exist. And I'll tell you my own personal story, but before we do that, you guys both co-authored a piece that came out in Yellowhammer that talked about what happened in Hoover. So I'm going to throw it back to y'all. Whichever one of you wants to jump in and give the background on this story about Hoover, please do so now.
Yeah, I can go ahead. So, just for a baseline, a certificate of need or a CON is essentially a government-mandated permission slip that providers have to obtain from the government before opening healthcare facilities and then caring for patients. And so Alabama is a state who has a certificate of need requirement for healthcare facilities. And the city of Hoover was going about this process and trying to get a certificate of need to open up an ambulatory surgery and medical diagnostic center in their city. They knew that this was needed, and they knew that their citizens wanted it and that there was an opportunity for this business there. So that's why they were going after this certificate of need. They went through all of the process, but they were held up in court for months because of another competitor had the opportunity to just bog them down in litigation. So Hoover ended up spending over $1 million in legal fees just to get this CON awarded and to open up this medical facility that they knew and that their citizens knew that they needed and wanted.
Which really makes no sense. What the government did by establishing the Certificate of Need Board review process, it allows competitors to stop anybody from being competitive. They're allowed to actually intervene in the process that even authorizes. It'd be as if me saying, I'm going to make sure that other radio show is not allowed to exist. by just filing a complaint with the organization that certifies radio shows. That makes no sense, and it's really antithetical to the idea of the free market.
Absolutely. And this was the Hoover Healthcare Authority. This was a municipal organization wanting to do this. This is the government seeking permission from another part of the government. I mean, can you imagine if this were private sector entities, which they get caught up in this as well? I mean, this is just an example of the government spending $1 million to fight the government. It's crazy.
It does get crazy. And it's really, I love the fact that it's called the certificate of need is actually referred to as a con, because it is. It's a con. But I also look at it and think, why do we have to have the government tell us whether or not we actually need something? The question is, do we need it? Well, we decided we do. So personally, here's my personal story, then I'll throw it back to y'all. As a state senator, I had a rural county, Cherokee County, in my district. And Cherokee County had no home health. There was no home health organization working in that area. And there's a company that wanted to establish a home health presence in Cherokee County. It would be of benefit to the entire community. It would benefit my constituents. It was a good idea. And I had to literally try to get the COM board to move just to certify whether a county that didn't even have a home health presence could have one. And they finally decided, well, we think you do need it. Well, of course we need it. That's why we're asking for it. But so Hoover finally got this thing done, right?
Yeah, they got they were awarded their certificate of need after spending over $1 million, which I feel like I have to repeat because that's just an insane price tag that you're now passing on to, I'm assuming, taxpayers and also consumers then with higher prices. And so they will be able to start developing this surgery center, but the opening of the surgery center is now pushed back for months because of all of this unnecessary litigation.
Well, and what's crazy is just to be allowed to build, they have to hire lawyers and go ahead and expect, especially in a competitive market on something, expect that the opposition may wind up basically filing a complaint or trying to slow things down. I mean, there were even, in this case, I read your article. In the Hoover Certificate of Need case, it was months of hearing, 10 days in court, 2,500 pages of testimony, 42 witnesses, and even salacious allegations of blackmail. Look, I'm a practicing attorney. I can just tell you some of the biggest cases I've had never came close to that level. And that's just to find out whether or not it was okay for someone to compete in the market.
Yeah, it is. It's honestly insane. I was following this story for months as it was unwinding. And I focus on con issues throughout the United States, but this one really kept my attention. And the allegations of blackmail, all of the different drama around this was really just to keep the case in court and to keep competition out of the market. Because under the con system, incumbent businesses really do have the upper hand. And we don't see that in any other sector of business outside of healthcare. It's not like we're allowing big businesses like Starbucks to keep small mom-and-pop coffee shops out of the business just because they don't think the community needs it.
Yeah.
We allow the community to make that decision for themselves.
Well, and rightfully so, because the idea of the American system of free market, I've used the term several times, means if you can build the better mousetrap, then you should be allowed to do so, and people will flock to you, and your competition will then rise to the level of competition, or they will fade away because they didn't keep up. But the idea that your competition can keep you from even getting started by just denying you having or your community having a need for you is just wrong. Hey, listen, guys, I tell you what, let's do. I'm about 30 seconds from the mandatory time to take a break. Let me go ahead and just take the break now. And if you guys can hang on the line, I'd like to come back and hear what other states are doing. Sophia, you can probably enlighten us on that and where their AFP has got something coming for Alabama. Okay. All right, we're taking a break right now. I've got Adam Thompson and Sophia Hamilton from Americans with Prosperity. Listen, this is unreal, and the fact that we subject ourselves to this on a regular basis is even more unreal. There's got to be some reform on this. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, we're going to go right back to the phones right now with Adam Thompson and Sophia Hamilton, both with Americans for Prosperity. And they're an organization, one of the largest in the nation, that advocates for conservative policies related to basically getting government out of the way of the success of the private sector and reducing the impact of regulation upon the private sector, and among other things. We just finished talking about the certificate of need laws that sort of bind up the medical profession and give you, by the way, the ability, or give incumbents the ability to stymie any competition in their market. It really is a backward system. It's sort of antithetical to the American dream. That being said, let me bring them back on right now and just ask, Sophia, you study this on a national basis. I know there have been several states, I think Georgia, Tennessee, and Florida, have each taken steps to try and reform their COM programs. But Alabama, where do we compare to other states, and what do you see as being the way forward on all this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So right now, there's about 35 states who have at least one type of con law on their books. So we have our work cut out for us here. But we have seen a growing trend of states repealing or significantly reforming their con laws. And that trend has been very profound in the South. 2 years ago, I believe it was 2022, South Carolina went and repealed their entire con regime. So they no longer have any con law. So would love to see that in Alabama, but I can really pass that on to Adam because he's more aware of the situation on the ground in Alabama and the possibilities for reform there.
Adam, you got any input on that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's certainly something we're going to be pursuing. You know, it's probably going to take a multi-year effort, quite frankly, because it's so entrenched within the state. But there needs to be changes, right? It is stifling healthcare access and economic growth in the healthcare industry, just like a lot of the regulatory reform that we want to see happen within the state. You know, con is just one of them. We want to see, administrative rule reform and other occupational licensing reform, including abolishing, frankly, just some unneeded boards and commissions that are doing nothing but charging individuals money for no health, safety, or welfare reasons. So certificate of need reform is at the top of our list. And it's something we're going to be advocating and working with partners and identifying lawmakers who want to make sure that Alabamians can live in a freer, more prosperous state.
Absolutely. I mean, I was shocked when I found out certain things. Like I think I told you offline that the Landscape Architecture Board just gave me fits. And then that one of the ones that really got me was the fact that barbers and hairstylists don't like to be considered lumped into the same category. They have a competitive nature there, but they're all governed by the same board, and that was a huge to do. I mean, go figure that occupational licensure is really just the government saying, okay, we will allow you to work. It just I get why attorneys and even doctors and some professions have to have some measure of governance. But there's a lot of them out there, like hair braiders. Why do you have to have an occupational license to be a hair braider? Anyway, yeah.
Absolutely. My favorite example to use is the Interior Design Board here in Alabama. And then this is nothing against interior designers, but I don't think they should be registered by the state. I really don't care if you have an ugly color of paint on your wall in your house. Right? There's no health, safety, welfare for that board. And so people like Senator Elliott down in Baldwin County, you know, have made these boards and commissions and occupational licensing a high priority, and certainly we appreciate that and want to find other lawmakers in the legislature who want to help, like I said, have more freedom and prosperity in the state. And that starts by letting people live their version of the American dream and removing those just unnecessary requirements.
Absolutely. Well, listen, let me ask you, go back to Sophia again. Hey, Sophia, is there any model legislation? I mean, I know that organizations like AFP and others that I've worked with or been aligned with before, I used to be with the Alabama Policy Institute, and we had sometimes model legislation that would be promoted so that states could try to get in line with each other. Is there anything being floated right now in CON reform as model legislation?
Yeah, I actually, over the summer, I was at the American Legislative Exchange Council. Conference, and there was model legislation that was passed there on certificate of need reform, actually in regards to birthing centers, which is one of the most egregious examples of certificate of need and where it can really impact patients' health and welfare. And that's a great piece of model legislation. And I think it gives states a good basis of what reform looks like and why we're going after reform of this archaic system.
Well, it needs to happen. And y'all are doing some, you know, the Lord's work, basically. But one day, maybe people will begin to see that government just keep feeding itself. It's what I call a self-licking ice cream cone. It creates the regulations so that it can create the jobs to enforce the regulations so that it can stymie the private sector, and then at the same time forgetting the private sector is what pays for the public sector. It's an amazing thing.
Absolutely. And I would be remiss if I didn't say Alabama Policy Institute and Stephanie Smith are great supporters of this, and we work well with them, and certainly appreciate all the work they have done building up to this point as well, and working with us going forward.
Absolutely. Well, Adam Thompson, Sophia Hamilton, thank you for the work you're doing with Americans for Prosperity. If folks out there want to find out more about your organization, where can they go to see what you're up to?
Absolutely. They can check out Americans for Prosperity, all spelled out, .org. Where they can sign up and click Alabama and get resources and alerts and get connected with what we're doing.
All right. Well, you guys, thanks so much for your work. We appreciate it. We'll have you back on again sometime soon. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. That was Adam Thompson and Sophia Hamilton with Americans for Prosperity. And listen, I tell you guys all the time that there are organizations out there that stand for what you stand for. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. And if you're having those water cooler conversations with a friend and you've got these resources like Alabama Policy Institute for Alabama-centric laws, or Americans for Prosperity with a national perspective, or Alliance Defending Freedom, or Liberty Council, I mean, these organizations exist. Heritage Foundation, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. They are replete with information that will help you be a conservative. All right, we're going to come right back. And we're going to talk about Biggie Size. Going to do some Biggie Size. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. I am talking about Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee. Even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Listen, we're going to switch gears right now. I am so looking forward to this. JP, so you have seen, I believe, that Trump was slinging some fries and flipping some burgers at McDonald's.
How could I have missed it?
It's like it's all the talk right now.
It was everywhere.
It was everywhere. And it was epic. And it was fun. That's the thing. You know what? Here's the deal. In case you have not had a chance to like see any social media at all for more than 30 seconds, then you may not know that yesterday Trump went to a McDonald's. And by the way, I've forgotten where it's from. Do you know where it was? Where the Trump? Oh, it was in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it was in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, so in
near Pittsburgh, I believe.
Indeed, it was in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, a little town called Feasterville Trevose. There's a name. Try to put that on a bumper sticker. Feasterville Trevose, Pennsylvania, Bucks County. This story I've got from Town Hall said this is where Trump likely sealed the deal for the Keystone State. So there are some folks that said it was like a Norman Rockwell painting. It was just hilarious. Well, so bottom line is this. Trump has been sort of trolling Kamala because she said, I worked at McDonald's one summer, trying to identify, you know, okay, that's fun, but we can find no record. McDonald's says they have no record of Kamala Harris ever working there, and she refuses now to confirm how and when she worked there. She just says that when she was in, was it college? I think it was college.
Yeah, around that age.
Yeah, that she was working at a McDonald's one summer. Okay, well, then someone somewhere ought to have a pay stub. Someone somewhere ought to have a recollection. You know, at least she could say is it was at this store at this time, and I worked these shifts. And if you remember it, you do. If you don't, then why'd you bring it up? All said and done, Trump's been trolling her on this. So he goes to a McDonald's, and he works a shift. He worked the fries. I mean, dropping fries, I've done that.
I have too.
Have you really? Where'd you work?
I worked at Chick-fil-A when I was in college.
I worked at Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, I worked there for about 6 months.
Which one?
There was one in Tuscaloosa on McFarland Drive. It's one of the it's one of the ones that hasn't been renovated as a drive through only one. It's old fashioned looking one where it's only drive through. And yeah, I did fries, did everything there.
Chick-fil-A's real.
Yeah,
I mean, you work.
Let me tell you, lunchtime at Chick-fil-A, it's no joke. It's
madness.
It's no joke.
So my version of lunchtime at Chick-fil-A now, because this is in the era before Chick-fil-A had freestanding stores. I worked in what used to be called Parkway City Mall in Huntsville.
Yeah, yep.
In the 80s, and we had we were the there was not a food court. We were the fast food in the mall during Christmas rush. The line would be out the door down the mall, and all I would hear in the back, more chicken. Oh God, and I would just keep slinging chicken, man.
Yeah, it's. I never worked in the back cooking, but I did. I did do fries, and I did. You know, getting the orders out. It's not an easy job.
It's not. I have a. There are. By the way, there are still things I do that I know I picked up at Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
Like to this day, every once in a while, I'll walk into the pantry at home, and I'll organize the stock. Yeah. And I'll have the old stuff to the front. You know what I'm saying? And then. I don't hardly ever carry real bills in my wallet anymore. If I do, I arrange them.
You organize them?
I do.
Yep.
I organize them.
Yep.
All right. So anyway, Trump went and he dropped fries and he flipped burgers and he had a great time and he worked the drive through, which was also probably the biggest hoot. People were showing up. Now, what's not being shown by the mainstream, the Democrats in general are having a complete come apart about this. This is awful. Trump is mocking the common man worker, and why would he do this? And this is just not humorous at all. It was hilarious. He was having the best time. The workers loved it, and the crowds. I've seen one video of the outside of the store. It was like a Trump rally outside of McDonald's.
Yeah, there were people lined up on the like the road was backed up just to get into there.
Yeah, and then there were like Trump flags flying on trucks and horns honking and people having a big time. I'm not sure how they did it because it had to have been blocking traffic in the area. But so one of the first things out the gate this morning I saw was liberals saying, this was all staged. It turns out Trump went to a McDonald's that was otherwise closed and they even had to have the Secret Service. And so here's my point. So what?
No duh.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's been shot at once. Somebody died next to him. Another time, somebody tried to shoot at him. Of course the Secret Service is there. Of course they have to screen people that are in there. Of course it's a photo op. No one believes for a second that the billionaire quit his job running for president and filled out a W-9 and became an employee of McDonald's. Of course it was a photo op. And he trolled Kamala like a champ. Like a champ. And the libs can't stand it.
I like the clip that started off the video I saw where he walked in and was like, I need a job. So I'm looking for a job.
Yeah, which is just humor.
Yeah.
You know, I said the other day, last week, you know, I did a segment. Was it Friday? Yeah, it was Friday. I called it Smell the Fear. That one of the things you're seeing a difference in right now is Kamala is getting more and more strident and seeming like desperate in the things she's doing and saying. Trump looks like he's just having a big time.
Yeah.
Trump's like he's out there just having fun. And I think that's part of the sense of things for the two campaigns. So the Kamala Harris side has now come at this with like, this was awful that he would stage this. This is demeaning of the office of the presidency. Really? That's your takeaway? How about this, Kamala? Go do something fun. I mean, Trump went and did the Catholic charity dinner. Al Smith dinner, Memorial Foundation dinner, and had an entire speech filled with one-liners and jokes, and had a big time, and he even laughed with Chuck Schumer, who had to sit there and listen to him talk about Chuck Schumer. He even laughed at Lawfare with Letitia James sitting right behind him the whole time. I mean, literally sitting on the podium on the dais behind him. He's acting a lot more, and Kamala's latest thing is he's unhinged, he's unsteady, and he's incapable of governing. I got news, lady. He's having a big time. He just did a 90-minute interview with the Wall Street Journal editorial board, and they came out and said, Kamala Harris needs to stop saying the unhinged and incapable thing because he did a 90-minute interview with a greater grasp of the facts than he even had back in 2016 when they first interviewed him. It's everything about the Harris campaign is backfiring. Still a close race? Absolutely. I got somebody on the phone. Let me do that real quick before I run out of time. Ah, is that Lee? Lee from Huntsville. How are you doing?
I am doing well. I wanted to comment on this because I think that this whole thing represents authenticity. So Trump comes across as authentic and lovable and likable, and he understands everyday people. I believe he probably even eats McDonald's. Kamala comes across as fake, disingenuous, a liar, a fraud, and people can smell it. And that's the difference in this. And this troll was epic. It was, I don't know who came up with this, but they're just brilliant. And when they say, oh, this is staged. Okay, when Kamala went into that, some sort of convenience store or something. Oh, I'm sure they didn't sweep the whole thing before she went in there. And I'm sure everybody in there wasn't either a reporter or Secret Service. Come on, they all do this. You can't have someone like President Trump who they've taken two shots at him and you just let any old Joe Blow go through the drive-thru? No.
Yeah.
Of course this was handled, but it was still epic.
It was very epic. And some of the responses, David Frum, who's a never-Trumper journalist, he tweeted out this morning and he said, he said Donald Trump went to pretend he was working at McDonald's. It was all posed. And I replied back to him and I said, Kamala Harris went to pretend that she was VP, but it was all posed.
Oh, that was brilliant.
And somebody else came back at me and said something like, Trump went in and pretended to serve people and it was awful. And I said, if Kamala Harris had been there, all she would have served were the black men. I mean, it's just like, that's just literally, the Trumps is having a big time.
Over 1 million served, whatever. Yes. Look, she's a fraud, and that's what this illustrates. She never worked at McDonald's. I don't believe it for a second. I think she's lying. Look at how your nephew could tell you exactly where he worked and what it looked like. This woman's a fraud.
That would be JP she's talking about, by the way. She is indeed a fraud. Lee from Huntsville, love you. Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
Bye.
All right, see you. We'll have Lee on Thursday, very likely, for it may be Friday because we're doing a different programming this week, but we'll talk about that later. In the meantime, just know this. The situation with Trump at McDonald's, I'm calling this the Biggie Size. He just Biggie Size his campaign. Like, it's the meme generator of the century. Him at McDonald's slinging fries, wearing an apron, handing bags of burgers out the drive-thru. People coming to the drive-thru loving the fact that he's there. Thank you, Mr. President. We're praying for you and we're voting for you. It's just, you couldn't ask for more. Was it staged? Well, of course it was. He didn't just like save up all of his, you know, leave time from McDonald's to go run for president. I mean, he's not really an employee there. He's having a great time. He's out there. It was last night. I saw that J.D. Vance apparently was at a bar and was serving drinks to people at the bar. And this morning he called Trump and said, hey, man, I had my big opportunity serving drinks at the bar, and you upstaged me with fries at McDonald's. But I just saw, too, that Richard Grenell, who was an intelligence guy with the Trump administration, Richard Grenell just tweeted out, he said, 51 former intelligence officials say that Kamala worked at McDonald's. They also said that the Hunter Biden laptop wasn't real. All right, we're going to talk more about this when we get back. We're talking about Biggie sizing. Bill Williams, Right Side Radio. You just got to laugh. You got to laugh. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just pulling pins on truth grenades up in here. That's what we're doing. All right. We're going to go right to the phone real quick so I don't lose time on that. Brian from Huntsville. Hey, man, how are you?
I'm getting along, and I'm enjoying the McDonald's in the front there. But keep in mind that I hope they don't try to slip him a paycheck or anything, because otherwise Jack Smith is going to be on his back claiming a tax evasion.
Oh, yeah, or abuse of his position for personal gain or something. Yeah, exactly.
And other than that, I just wanted to mention that if you look at it, when Trump was younger, Ronald McDonald and Trump have similar hair colors, if he slicked his hair back a little bit, he could be Ronald.
Oh, my gosh. I think Ronald would appreciate having Trump's paycheck, though. I think I can say that. All right, fair enough.
He's got a bigger one. He's got a bigger one than Trump does. I guarantee. Have a good one.
Thanks, bye. Brian. We'll see you, man. Yeah, I got a ton of text messages. We get back from the top of the hour break here in a few minutes. I'll start taking some texts and getting those cleaned up. And some are right on this same topic that we're on right now. Did you find anything, by the way? So there's a question right now about whether or not Trump paid for the food of all the people. Did his campaign come in and pay for it? Did he pay for it?
So I can't find anything on the internet that confirms that, but I know I saw a video of him asking if he could. He was like, can I do that? Am I allowed to do that? I don't know if they ever let him, but I can't find any confirmation, but I know I saw that video. He tried to. I know he tried to.
Well, that's cool. Listen, the bottom line is it there's some weird nuances. Like the other day, he was in a grocery store. A lady was checking out. He had been kind of walking around talking to people. Just had one of those unplanned stops in a grocery store of all places, kind of highlighting the fact that groceries are so hard to buy in the Biden-Harris economy. And he walked up. There was a lady who was checking out, and they were ringing up her totals, and he just handed the $100 bill to the cashier and said, her bill just got $100 lighter. and it was, like, really neat. I mean, the lady was blown away. She was thankful. So he was thankful because she's a single mom raising kids, I believe. But then next thing you know, liberals are like, you can't do that. That's a violation of campaign finance law.
So that exact incident is when I, questioned if they let him pay for the meals at McDonald's. But he at least, offered to. So there's that. Yeah.
Unreal. Well, anyway, what happened when he was there? Well, first of all, yeah, he had a big time. Yeah, the employees seemed to love it. Yeah, the crowd showed up. A reporter asked, what's your favorite part about all this? Story here on the Daily Wire. He said, I like it all. I like every ounce of it, everything. But I do like the French fries where I'll be working. And that's what he did. He went back and he worked the fries. Then he worked the drive-thru. And he took a swipe at Kamala Harris several times. CBS reported a large crowd of Trump supporters gathered near the McDonald's in Feasterville, Bucks County, Pennsylvania, to get a peek at the former president. A large crowd. I'm glad somebody mentioned it because, like I said, it was like a mini Trump rally right outside the door. So was it staged? Of course it was. Of course it was. Story here on Newsweek. They cannot abide by this. They cannot abide. Headline, was Donald Trump's McDonald's shift staged? Why are they asking this question? Why do they even ask this question? Of course it was, and it was fun. It was big doings. Here's the thing. The store was closed. The store, the McDonald's local outlet was closed. According to a post on Reddit, a sign was placed on the storefront by Derek Guacamantonio, I believe his name is, the unit manager. We plan to be closed on Sunday, October 20th until 4 p.m. to accommodate a visit at the request of former President Trump and his campaign. The note ended with, I apologize for the inconvenience of closing our restaurants. Sincerely look forward to serving you very soon. Keep in mind, everywhere he goes, if there's a planned stop and people know he's coming, they have to do security, advance details. They have to check everything. They have to vet the employees. They probably also wanted to do a lot of cleaning, get everything spick and span, looking really up and up. A lot of photo op behind the scenes. So was it staged? Of course it was. Why do you even ask that question? It says, as his staff and reporters observed, a McDonald's employee instructed him on how to lower his fries into the oil, salt them, and then use a scoop box.
You know what's funny is I saw a clip while he was doing that. He was like, can I add some extra salt? And the guy was like, yeah, sure. And Trump just like puts all the salt in there. And the McDonald's worker's like, all right, that's enough. That's enough. That's enough salt.
He did, by the way. It was pretty funny. At one point he says, I've now worked 15 minutes longer than Kamala at McDonald's. She never worked here, he said. He also just had a great time with people at the drive-thru window. I watched a video of that. I will say the Dems have now, the knives are out. He can't have fun. We can't allow him to have fun. How can he have fun? I thought we shut down his fun meter. How's his fun meter still pegging out? Why is he having fun? This is not right. He must be unhinged. We tried to get him with lawfare. We tried to get him with, all the issues. We tried to get him taken off the ballots. We tried to shoot him, for God's sake, and he's still having fun. John Cooper, a former campaign chair for ex-President Barack Obama, said on Twitter, he said, quote, the irony is that Trump's 34 felony convictions would prevent him from getting a job at McDonald's, except that That's a false statement. McDonald's is on a list of what they call felon-friendly employers. They want people to have a second chance. So I guess Trump has got his second chance as he's, you know, out there doing all the work and trying so hard to be the guy and actually having fun. And, oh, by the way, trolling Kamala Harris like a bandit. I mean, trolling her like a bandit just cracks me up. More of this, please. What's next? Can we get him to play a round of golf and talk about how Kamala never has? Can we get him to, I don't know, underwater basket weaving and Kamala never, just do something. Find that thing. Keep having fun. Two more weeks of this, you guys. Two more weeks. All the way to the finish line. We come back, I'm going to get a whole bunch of texts. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live from the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Welcome to hour number three. I don't even know where this show's going. It's gone by so fast here on a Meatloaf Monday, but we're glad you're with us. Coming right out the gate, I'm going to jump on the phone. Is that Jeffro? Jeffro from Indiana. Hey, man, how you doing?
Would you like fries with that?
Yes, I would. Biggie size them, please. Thank you, sir.
I think maybe she served up too many Happy Meals.
She needs a Happy Meal right now.
You know what it is? Oh, yeah. She's got the unhappy meal right now, I don't think, especially after Brett Baer interviewed her the other day. I don't think she's really happy about that.
No, but, still not. Still not.
But you know what it is, Phil? I think it's, Joe Biden had corn pop there because, he's a bad dude.
He's a bad dude. Carried a chain.
Humanized him with him. Yeah. And Kamala thinks, how can I relate to the people? Oh, I know. I work at McDonald's. It's a fast food.
Except nobody remembers her. Oh, my gosh. Oh,
well, she is kind of forgettable, except for when she starts cackling and laughing. Can you imagine coming up to the drive-thru, and would you like fries with that? Oh, my gosh.
You know what's funny is right before we went on the air, JP pointed out, and I'd forgotten this, they said, Trump's time at McDonald's was all staged. Well, what do you call when Tim Walz was out there trying to hunt with a shotgun he couldn't load? That was about as staged as it gets. Just saying.
Everything they do is staged. I mean, the only thing that wasn't staged, I guess, even her interviews with 60 Minutes all staged and everything. They sit there and do the edits and everything else. The only thing that wasn't staged was her interview with Brett Baer, and they're really wishing that would have been staged.
You know what wasn't staged, though? What wasn't staged was the people's response, because folks were showing up in droves to that parking lot just to get a glimpse of Trump there and to see if they could get some fries. And I tell you what else is going to happen. I believe that McDonald's is going to have record sales. They had to shut down for a day to get ready for it, and I bet you the bounce back, I bet you they become a tourist destination now. And they are probably selling fries like crazy.
Oh, I imagine so, yeah. That's the best publicity you can get, except for maybe they'll be firebombed by some crazy liberal
Don't say that. No.
You never know. You got to remember, the crazy people are out there yet walking around. So.
Well, the largely peaceful protests did seem to target restaurants like that in Atlanta. So we'll just pray that these guys have a massive, massive overcoming of their day closed. And I think it's going to happen. I think they're going to sell more fries than they've ever sold in the history of that outlet.
Oh yeah, I'd eat there. Just say hey, I eat where Trump was serving food at, man, slinging this McDonald's.
You know, it's funny. As much as I've talked about McDonald's fries today, now I want some. I mean, like I do. I need a biggie size of McDonald's fries, good and salty. That's the way I like them. Just saying.
But you got to get them and eat them within 5 minutes. Otherwise, they go from the best fry in the world to the worst fry in the world.
Well, they do have a shelf life. I had a friend of mine one time. We sat down at McDonald's. I think it was actually at McDonald's. And he just tied right into his fries and hadn't even unwrapped his burger. I said, "You going to unwrap that burger?" He goes, no. He said, I've got a plan here. I said, "Okay." He goes, "Shelf life of a fry when it's hot is about 5 minutes. You got to get those done first." And I went, "That's genius." And so from then on, I always eat my fries first now. Just saying.
Yeah, and that's the way it is. I mean, Even Dell Jackson worked at McDonald's, so he was a manager, I guess. So.
Did he really? They let Dell Jackson manage a restaurant with people and everything?
Well, they're letting him. Well, they're kind of letting him manage radio stations. I know that's a disaster too. But,
No, he's doing a good job at that. He's doing a good job at that.
Oh, I know he does.
All right.
He finally found his niche.
Where are you at right now? Are you on the road?
I'm doing about 5 miles an hour on the loop inside Nashville here, trying to get out of this menagerie.
Well, at least you're not down there. Was it Falkville where you have to wait for your trailer? At least you're already on the road and halfway home, man.
Yeah, I only had to wait 5 hours the other day, so that wasn't bad.
No, not too bad. All right, well, stop and get you some fries. Tell them you want them biggie-sized. And
that's what I'm going to do.
Send me the bill. I'll pay
for it. I'll even use my McDonald's app so I can get free fries.
Nice. All right, man. You have a great trip. We'll talk to you soon.
Have a good one, Phil.
See you, buddy. Bob from Madison. Hey, Phil, I don't know if you remember, but in 1984 in Tuscaloosa, Ronald Reagan went to a McDonald's in Northport. And there was up until a few years ago a picture of Ronald Reagan and a signed $20 bill and the cashier that took it. And I know for a while they even had a plaque on the table where he sat. So I thought that was interesting. That's huge. I did not know that. You're an Alabama guy. Did you know that?
Nope. I lived there for 2 years and did not know that.
We need to find out about that. So there's, you know, up in D.C. in the Alexandria area, there's a church called Christ Church. It's been around since the 1700s. It's got a pew that's marked. It's the pew where George Washington and a number of other presidents have all sat. And now we have a McDonald's with a president's table. So that's good. That's really good. Kenny from Huntsville says, all the folks in the crowd at Kamala Harris events need to scream, at which McDonald's did you work? Either that or scream, Jesus is Lord. Both of them seem to make her mad, apparently. We'll talk about that later in the week, but yes. Louie from Arab says, one large order of Trump fries, please. Yes, indeedy. They could sell Trump fries now. Just put them in a big container and call them Trump fries. David from Bucky says, Phil, it seems to me the same could be said of the Biden-Harris administration. The last almost 4 years seem staged. Yes, indeed. Everything about it. It's kind of weird, but yeah. Jeffro from Indiana in his text said, Phil, I'm a pretty patient guy, but if Trump loses, I don't have enough patience to wait till the next administration or if this nation. And then his text broke off. So, brother, I don't know what else you were trying to say, but it sounded like you were opining that things could get difficult. It ain't going to happen. We're going to go all the way on this. JD from Hartzell, you are dreaming with 2 more weeks. When Trump wins, we're looking at years of wailing, gnashing of teeth, and every crazy trick they can dream up. Maybe, but here's a thought, first of all, and I mean this with all sincerity. First of all right? Pray for that peace that surpasses all understanding. That's what Philippians 4 says, that we should be anxious for nothing, but in all things, through prayer and supplication, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God that surpasses all understanding will guard your heart and mind in Christ Jesus. So my hope, my intent is to pray through this as peace. Here's my other thing. When I was a part of the 2010 Republican wave in Montgomery, I said this on the show a week or so ago, we flipped the state house from 136 straight years of Democrat control to a Republican supermajority overnight. And for the next 4 years, they attacked us relentlessly. The teachers union, some of the liberal interests, the Democrats especially, it was one filibuster after another. It was screaming. It was scandal. It was all the things. And then we all got reelected again 4 years later, and it all got quiet. It's like it got eerily quiet, because I think what happened is all the screaming didn't work, and we came back, and then they had to just go ahead and go, wow, I guess we got to deal with them now, and so they did, and we settled in, and it was, sometimes it was more fun in the first 4 years, but the reality is I think that Trump's going to get reelected, and they're going to go, crap. And they're going to have regrets on all the lawfare. They're going to have regrets and buyer's remorse on all the things they chose to just fight against. And I think it's going to be more peaceful. That's my prediction. I hope it's true. Mike from Florence, guy I worked with in Louisiana, ordered fries at McDonald's with no salt. At the table, he salted the heck out of them. Confused, I asked why. He said it guarantees fresh fries because they have to cook a new batch. That's true. That's also so inconsiderate of the people who work there. I'll never forget working at Chick-fil-A, and if somebody came up and they wanted saltless fries, we had to, because keep in mind there's a lot of salt in the fry bin. So you have to scrape everything out. You have to clean the fry bin completely. You have to stop what you're doing on anybody else's orders, and you have to do an entire new batch of fries so that one person can have no salt on their fries. Here's an idea. Don't order fries. Now, we did it. My pleasure, sir. But I'm going to be honest with you. It's extremely frustrating. And if somebody's doing that just to get the freshest fries, all you got to do is say, I'd like a fresh batch, please. And most of the time, they'll just drop a fresh batch. To say you want it saltless, all you did was create work unnecessarily for someone who's getting paid by the hour. Just not a fan. John from Huntsville says, Phil, the best fries are Checkers fries. I love Checkers fries. I would take some Checkers fries, like, right now. I'm getting really hungry. Devin from Brownsboro says, make McDonald's great again. Oh, my gosh. I got a pile more. I can't even keep up with these texts. You see how many are down there?
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
Oh, my gosh. All right, we'll take a break right now. We'll come back. I'll get a few more texts, and then we're going to close out the show with some Second Amendment libs and guns, y'all. Libs and guns. It's not just about whether Timmy Waltz knows how to load a shotgun. Sometimes it's about what they're trying to do to your Second Amendment. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just giving you all the truth you can put on a bumper sticker. So let's a few wrapping thoughts here on the Trump McDonald's thing. First of all, epic troll. Epic troll. He trolled Kamala Harris and she can't stand it. She is beside herself because not only did he get a moment that is going viral, but he trolled her so hard in the process. So there's that. Second thing is, if somebody's saying something to you about it and they say, well, you know, it was staged. Of course it was staged. We all know it was staged. Nobody believes he filled out a W-9 and applied to be an actual employee of McDonald's. He's the president or former president of the United States. They had to shut the store down for security purposes alone. The crowd still showed up. The employees had a great time. And it meant a lot, and they had a great time doing it. And they showed that he's literally just kind of relaxed in the last 2 weeks of this campaign. He's going at it with he's having fun. So there's that. Yes, it was staged. And then number three, I'll just tell you right now, as somebody who has, I've done a little bit of everything, I feel like. I mean, I've been doing something since I was probably 15 years old. Whether it was mowing grass, whether it was roofing houses in the summertime with my uncle in Birmingham, which was brutal, whether it was, delivering pizza, delivering flowers for a florist, working at the movie theater at the Madison Twin in Huntsville, making popcorn and doing the whole thing, slinging fries and chicken at Chick-fil-A. I have been working somewhere almost nonstop since I was probably 15 years old. As a guy who has slung fries, as a guy who I've done janitorial work. Of course, there's the military, there's ministry, there's all these things that I've done. As somebody who has gotten out there and worked and gotten my hands dirty and struggled to make a paycheck, at one point we were committed to Charlene being at home with our kids when they were little and have no regrets whatsoever on that, because having her be able to be there was what we felt was the most important thing for our family. And next to Jesus Christ, Charlene being with our kids was probably the greatest thing that could have happened to our kids. And yet it also meant that at one point I was literally doing janitorial work in the morning from like 5 to 7, going to work from 8 to 5:30, and then delivering pizza at night, and then National Guard at least 1 week in a month. And it was just what I did. As somebody who has been out there working hard over the years, sometimes in places where no one else even knows you're working hard, the fact that Trump did this, I think, means a lot. Because he could have just as easily just talked about McDonald's. He could have as easily been in his ivory tower as a guy who's never seen behind the counter in a McDonald's. And it's a photo op, and we know that. But you know what? It still means a lot. I have done every kind of work imaginable, it seems. And the idea that he did this is just fun. It's kind of lighthearted. It brings back memories. It also makes me appreciate the fact that he's willing to go get his hands dirty and do something that means something to the average Joe and Jane who votes. I think he's going to wind up winning Pennsylvania, and I think they're going to look back on this day when he worked at McDonald's and call that one of the turning points. Shorty from Anderson says, hey, Phil, hope you and JP had a great weekend. We did. Thank you very much, although JP's a Bama fan, so not so much there. He says, it's all as if Kamala Harris says she worked at McDonald's. Can one reporter ask her what goes on a plain hamburger? She'll start off by saying, listen, I was raised in a middle-class family and totally avoid the question. She probably would. Roy from Hartsville says, Trump, in a few minutes, worked at McDonald's more than Kamala did her entire life. Yes, indeed. Now, we got a new texter in the line. This goes by David. David, tell us where you're from. He's actually a truck driver who was passing through Decatur at one point listening to the show. But, David, tell us where you're from. We'll add that to your name line. He says, I believe Trump was showing his willingness to be a servant to the American people, kind of like Jesus showed the apostles he was willing to be a servant, not a king, when he washed their feet. Wow. That's David. Wow. Thanks, man. That's cool. And yeah, that's a great point. Maybe that's why it feels that way, like I said a minute ago to me. Like he's willing to get down there, you know, see what's up. Pam from Locust Fork says, Trump out there networking. LOL, I love it. Roughly Ann from Huntsville says, Trump paid for the food. Unconfirmed. I don't think he did. I think he asked to. JP looked that up a while ago, and I think he asked to pay for the food, and he was probably advised that campaign finances didn't allow him to pay for people's stuff while he's on the campaign trail. Shame. Chad from Huntsville says, all one needs to do is listen to Kamala's very scripted, managed speeches and Trump's off-the-cuff commentary. The difference is stark. You know, that's a great point. I think every interview she's had has been staged, except for the one with Brett Baer, which is why she looked so uncomfortable. John from Minor Hill, Tennessee, says, so Donald Trump demeaned the office of president by showing an ability to mingle with the middle class by serving others at a McDonald's, but it's okay that the sitting VP went on a raunchy sex podcast to appeal to the younger generation on a topic she finally knows something about. Okay. Wow. I think John just nailed it. Jim from Grove Oak says, Trump also shot down the dim talking points about him being exhausted. That's a good point. That's part of the thing right now is he's exhausted. He's not going to make it. How can he possibly govern? Why would you say that? I mean, listen, as a much younger man, I campaigned across four counties, not the whole nation, four counties. Wore me out, but I just kept on going. Trump's just going. He's just going.
Yeah, that came from when he was on Bongino's show and said at the end that he was tired, and he said something about how he needed to leave, and they took that out of context, and Bongino tweeted out about, actually, we kept him about 20 minutes longer than he was supposed to stay, and then he stayed after that and signed a bunch of stuff for hurricane relief victims. So it's like, nice try, but nice he, try. He went above and beyond.
Don't let facts get in the way. You know. Pete from Decatur says, how about a tax return? Wouldn't that have a W-2? Seems she could get her hands on that. Nah, she probably didn't file her taxes. Adam from Athens says, hey, JP, go Vols. Oh, Lord, somebody had to go there on you, JP.
Somebody, you know, I'm not used to this. My whole life, we beat Tennessee for about 15 years straight, so I'm not really I'm not used to that. But it seems like they're still recovering from the 15 years a little bit.
Is it bruising your feels? Is it bruising your
feels
all up?
It's just unusual. I'm just used to beating Tennessee all the time, you know?
All right, music is playing. We're going to a break. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, I'm talking about this one. No, I mean this one, Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. So last dipper of the day, libs and guns. Libs and guns, those two things don't go together. I know. They don't. And they don't want them to go together with you either. Libs and guns. I mean, every time you turn around, there's somebody going all Tim Walz on what they think they know about guns when they really don't. Libs and guns. I look at libs and guns as like the polar opposites, the two things that shall not. It's like there's a magnetic repulsion that takes place when libs and guns come into near contact with each other. All God's children have seen what happens when libs talk about guns. They think they know something. They don't know nothing. And I'm looking at several stories that I've got here. I'm going to I'm going to take this dipper for a few minutes here and just give you some indication of things that are happening locally. Now, a story that I brought up briefly last week is the fact that House Democrats in Alabama are talking about trying to deal with permitless carry. How dare we pass a law that says that you can have a pistol in your possession without having a permit? Well, you can. In Alabama, we finally got that done. We loosened things up a little bit while I was in the legislature, and then they finally got the permitless carry thing done altogether. Just, what, 2022, I think? Yeah. So 1819 News has a story that came out that I mentioned briefly last week, and I'm going to touch on it again before I go into the next story. But this one says that there are two pieces of legislation right now being dropped by Democrats in preparation for the next legislative session, which I believe starts in either January or February of the coming year. It rotates different months. But nonetheless, early next year, a few months away, legislature's in session. We all got to stay on our toes and keep track of what they're up to. But House Bill 58 by ultra-liberal former chair of the state Democratic Party, Representative Chris England, Democrat from Tuscaloosa, would add criminal penalties to certain aspects of permitless carry, like, making sure that you've got them secured somehow, or making sure that ain't nobody can, get to your gun. Stupid stuff. Bottom line is this. The law's in place. Libs hate it because libs and guns don't go together. House Bill 23 is the one that cracks me up. House Bill 23, who's got this bill? State Representative Kenyatta Hassel. State Representative Kenyatta Hassel from Birmingham, Democrat. House Bill 23 would require a person to have a permit to legally carry an assault weapon in a vehicle or on their person. So can't have it in your car, even in the trunk. Can't have it on your person. How do you do that? I don't know what you're supposed to do with it then. What? So anyway, the bottom line is, first you have to, under the law, define what the thing is. So what is an assault weapon under House Bill 23 by Kenyatta Hassel of Birmingham? Well, it may have to have, if it has a pistol grip. What? Yeah. Assault weapon if it has a pistol grip. A thumb hole stock. No. Yes, because those make the weapon more deadly, you understand. A folding or telescopic stock. Well, I can just tell you from having used a folding or telescopic stock that those don't necessarily change accuracy. They might even make it worse. A second hand grip or protruding grip that can be held by the non-trigger hand. What does that mean? That means somewhere out on the foregrip of the rifle, you actually have a peg you can hold on to. No, yes. You do not want a stable platform on a weapon because that makes it more deadly, I guess. A flash suppressor. How does a flash suppressor hurt anybody? A flash suppressor merely keeps the shooter from being blinded by the flash. A flash suppressor, a muzzle brake. Does anyone know what a muzzle brake is? A muzzle brake merely just guides the exploding gases coming out of the barrel so they don't offset your they basically make sure that the weapon stays more stable. A muzzle compensator, a threaded barrel, a grenade launcher. How do we go from a thumbhole stock to a grenade launcher? In the same piece of legislation to define an assault weapon, we just went down a list. I'm looking at a bullet point list. I'm holding it to the camera. This is a story that I pulled off of 1819, I think. 1819 News. Dateline 6 days ago. A pistol grip, a thumb hole stock, a grenade launcher. Libs and guns, man. Any feature capable of functioning as a protruding grip. Okay, I'm really not sure how grenade launcher gets lumped into a protruding grip. A threaded barrel capable of accepting a flash suppressor. By God, don't you have a threaded barrel? Do they know what a threaded barrel is? Jeez. Anyway, I could go on, but the list gets more ridiculous. I'm going to go ahead and challenge if Kenyatta Hassel would like to come on the air and have a discussion about firearms. I would love to break down for him why his assault weapon ban is built on absurdities. Actual absurdities. Why? Because libs and guns are like the confluence of unmixable recipe ingredients. Just doesn't work. However, just so you'll know, there are rational people. 2 days ago, State Senator Chris Elliott, in a follow-up story by 1819 News, made it real clear. He said it's not going to happen. He says, as a matter of fact, I'm certain it's not going to happen. If the Big Ten mayors are thinking that's what they want to make their legislative priority, they're making a mistake. We've got permitless carry in Alabama, and we're going to have permitless carry in Alabama. It's not going to change. Good for you, Republican State Senator Chris Elliott. Now, libs love messing with your Second Amendment, and they will not quit. And do not think for a second that just because we live in red state Alabama, they're not trying to do it here. We've had real issues with, of course, liberal Mayor Randall Woodfin, the mayor of Birmingham, trying to blame criminal activity in his city on firearms themselves, not on the criminals, not on the weak on crime policies, not on the liberal environment he's tried to create, but on the firearms themselves. But in Montgomery, they went one step further. Now, I got a story here that I'm going to mention, and then JP did some searching on it. But so about a week ago, the Montgomery City Council, just so you know, the Montgomery City Council has been dealing with crime in their area. Now, they've done some good things, created the joint task force that's been, you know, doing some work to try and clean up the streets. I'm talking about law enforcement joint task force. But the city council, though, put in place, contrary to state law, they put in place a requirement for a permit to carry a concealed firearm in the city of Montgomery. It's completely unenforceable. The attorney general pretty much gave them a written backhand on it and said, unconstitutional, can't do it. A violation of state law, can't do it. So last week, we understand the Montgomery City Council was going to bring up for consideration the idea of repealing what they had just passed. JP, you looked at that. Did they do it?
No. So a story here from 1819 News on the 16th says that Montgomery City Councilman Glenn Pruitt said at a Tuesday meeting that he wanted a vote on the repeal ordinance to be delayed until the next city council meeting. So I don't know when the next city council meeting is. I'm assuming sometime this week, probably, aren't they?
What was the delay based thing? On? Do we know?
It doesn't say. Oh, well, it says, quote, there were some questions that came up, some valid questions that came up. It said we got a letter from the attorney general's office said that we are possibly in direct conflict with the state law, and I don't want to do that.
Well, so then why don't you just go ahead and repeal it right then? So we're going to delay it because now we realize we have problems with it, but we're going to, okay. It's coming. They're going to have to repeal it. Either that or go to court and pay the legal fees to repeal what you could have repealed for free. It's everywhere, though, y'all. It just is. It's everywhere. This is not going to be a long dipper. I'll just go ahead and tell you a couple of things. I mean, I've got cases right here where article in the Washington Times, Supreme Court lets Pennsylvania ban 18 to 20-year-olds from carrying guns. You can ban an age group now, apparently, in that state. New York gun control regime was actually defeated in court. That occurred just about 10 days ago. Second Amendment rights activists scored another win against New York State's expansive gun control regime when a federal judge set a newly enacted state law that bans licensed firearm owners from carrying concealed on all private property. It was unconstitutional. You think? How about this one? Ohio. By the way, Ohio, the state of J.D. Vance. I keep seeing Ohio in these liberal contexts, and I realize that that's also where our conservative vice presidential candidate comes from. It's kind of crazy. But in Ohio, listen to how the Ohio Capital Journal describes things. First of all, Ohio had tried to pass anti-gun legislation. The Buckeye Institute, which is the Ohio version of the Alabama Policy Institute. All these different state institutes relate to each other and do collaborative work occasionally. And the Buckeye Institute is a great group from Ohio that relates to what API is here in Alabama. Buckeye Institute fought it, went to court with them, with the state of Ohio, and got a injunction on a local attempt to curtail Second Amendment rights. Here's how the Ohio Capital Journal opens their article. This is what libs and guns sound like. You ready? An Ohio court has shot down Columbus's efforts to save lives, siding with gun rights advocates to rule the city can't require firearm owners to lock their guns up to prevent children from accessing them. That's their version. How about this? You can't tell someone inside their house they have to lock up a firearm, or what are you going to do? Come in their house and inspect without a warrant? How are you going to control? You're going to wait till the, I guess you're going to wait till somebody gets shot and say, did you have it locked up, and then make it a secondary crime? No, absolutely not. Ohio Fifth District Court of Appeals dismissed the city's request to overturn the Delaware County. Bottom line is this. The trial court enjoined it, said you guys can keep the case going if you want to, but you're not going to be able to pursue that in the time being. Because they knew the Buckeye Institute was right. Look, libs and guns, y'all. Libs and guns. It gets funny. It gets ridiculous. And then every once in a while you remember, oh, it's actually one of my constitutional rights. And if they can do it to that one, then which one of our constitutional rights is next? Which one of them comes up at free speech? Oh, well, you know, we've got to take care of that. You know, it's disinformation. We made sure you can't say those things are not approved. Right to assemble? Well, we're going to have to curtail your worship gatherings because we're going to declare a pandemic and you can no longer go to church and be with your people to worship despite the fact that your faith wants you to.
And you talked about Mayor Woodfin too, his obsession with Glock switches.
Yeah, oh yeah.
That's what's causing all the crime in Birmingham. It's not the inability to get the gangs under control. And no. Then Biden is gonna bring him up to DC to make this empowering speech on Glock switches and something that's already illegal on the federal level, by the way, but making it doubly illegal, that's gonna solve the problems. It's like, you know how bad of a mayor Woodfin is if Biden himself had to bring him up to give a speech. That shows you right there how incompetent he is.
That's absolutely the death knell. There is no conservative left that goes, he's kind of a good guy. No, nobody believes that anymore. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. All right, the grades are already in. Let's JP, let's see how we did. Jeff from Indiana gets an A+ for his fantastic phone call. Phil's guest speakers, Adam and Sophia, get an A++ for their equally magnificent performances. JP and Phil both get an A++. However, because Phil's A++ has been supersized, he is technically today's winner. Nice.
Wow.
Just biggie size, my brother. Thank you so much, John from Huntsville, as always. Jeff P. from ARAB says, just wanted to tell you, great show today, Phil. Thank you, man. As always, you knocked it out of the park. Man, Jeff P., I appreciate that, brother. Thank you so much. Brian from Huntsville says, I went to high school with a rifle on the back window of my auto, and so did my science teacher. Yes. I mean, Lord, how many guys went hunting before school, like in duck season or whatever, and they come in, you know, wearing their camo, zip-ups and had their guns in the back window of their truck. I mean, just life. Roy from Hartzell, libs and guns. I hope they don't ban the little thing that goes up and makes it really scary. Okay. Nice. Dustin from Hillsboro. Doesn't a threaded barrel help match guns with fired ammunition? Listen, it does. I'm pretty sure they meant threaded, like at the end of the barrel, threaded to screw on a silencer. The reality is not all silencers screw on that way. At the same time, a threaded barrel usually means the twist ratio on the inside to help rifle. It's called rifling. And like my AR has a 1-to-9 twist ratio, a threaded barrel. I think they just need to work on their vernacular a little bit. And I'm no gun aficionado, but I know a little something, and I know better than to drop a bill about something I know nothing about. How about that? Chris from Gaston. What if your grenade launcher has a pistol grip? Well, I think you're doubly wrong then, brother. I think you got a serious problem. I think somebody needs to come and talk with you. Pete from Decatur says a grenade launcher is extra salt on the assault weapon, like the assault on the fries Trump was making. Oh, Pete, brother, you're trying too hard on that one, man. JT from Monrovia, Matthew 16:20, the least of you shall be first. Trump is showing where he stands. Okay, there you go. Brian from Decatur, not to beat a horse to death, but I keep bringing up Molly Hatchet, however you play Pearl Jam on your station, which is an extremely liberal far-left group against the Second Amendment, and it's similar to playing Ted Nugent on MSNBC, LOL. I know, I like playing some Foo Fighters too, and they won't let Trump play their songs at his rallies, but I still like the song. David, by the way, you got him already, I saw that, it's David from Tuscumbia. David, thank you much. He says he drives for a company. I won't name the company. He says, not sure if you want to use that part. He says, I don't care. I'm absolutely addicted to this show. You guys are awesome. Thanks, David. Appreciate you, man. And stay safe on the road. We appreciate what you do. Jay from Hartsel. Trump wins a few more court cases. His record will be better than Kamala's. Wow. That deserves some applause because you see what he did there, right? Wins a few more Trump cases, better than Kamala's. Outstanding. Jay from Hartsel. Ryan from Hazel Green sends us a meme. What have you sent me? Oh, it's Coach DeBoer. Coach, what went wrong out there today? Well, I'll start off by saying that I grew up in a middle-class household. You know that's funny.
It is funny.
That is funny.
It is funny.
That was funny. I don't care who you are. That's funny. Especially when you're an Auburn fan. That's real funny.
Yeah.
James of St. Clair says, how about that? I, too, work janitorial to keep my wife at home with our new babies, and I've worked fast food, too. But sadly, there's nary a Quiznos to be found in Alabama anymore. Quiznos. I'd forgotten about Quiznos. Mike from Harvest says, first timer, but I listen, it's the first time to text, but listens every day. He says, you know, Kamala couldn't work at McDonald's. Can't deep fry a salad. Nice. I like it. Mike from Harvest, thanks for joining the text lines. Do it more often, brother. Mike from Florence says, she's mad because there's no McKamalas. I just got that. I'd never seen this. McDonald Trump. McKamala? No, McDonald's. I like it. That, give Mike from Florence another round of applause, too. He earned that one. I didn't see that one until just now. Epic. Epic. This audience is amazing. If Trump fixed the ice cream machine, the election would be over, says Andrew Stoney, Alabama. I'm telling you, man, this is the meme central right here. There's more stuff getting done out of this. Devin from Brownsboro says, me and my son enjoyed a walk at the CMP. Outstanding. Awesome experience. Never would have heard about it had they not advertised on your station. Glad of it, Devin. Thank you, brother. I'll pass that on to him. Listen, you guys, have an amazing night. And don't forget, there are more of us than there are of them. God is still on his throne. Stay in the fight. We'll see you tomorrow.